Appreciate David saying that my sermon this morning was a home run. I think it was more of a like a base on error, really, maybe. Maybe a walk. Maybe it was a walk. But I appreciate you being here tonight. Where for just a few moments tonight, I want to talk about this passage in Genesis chapter 13, Abram's choice. It's before he got his name changed to Abraham. This is when he was known as Abram. And in this passage, Abram makes a choice. He makes a series of choices, but there's one choice he doesn't make. I want to talk about that for a few moments tonight. As you recall the passage, Abram had gone down into Egypt and had some experiences there and came out of it okay because the Lord protected him, and he decided leave Egypt, and so he came up from Egypt to the Negev, he and his wife, and all that belonged to him, and Lot with him. And Lot was his nephew, and Abram was very rich in livestock and silver and gold. So Abram was doing okay, had a lot of herds and flocks, and for a nomad, for a person of his profession, that was a good thing. And he had wealth, and he had his wife, and his nephew. He didn't have a son yet. He didn't have the child that he longed for, hoped for. But he was doing all right. In fact, they were doing so well, it says that as they went up on his journeys from the Negev as far as Bethel to the place where his tent had been at the beginning, between Bethel and Ai, to the place of the altar which he had made there formerly, and there Abram called the name of the Lord. So Abram worshiped God. Abram was thankful to God. He had escaped kind of a dicey situation in Egypt and in fact come out of it very well. And so he calls on the name of the Lord. And it says in verse 5 that Lot, who went with Abram, also had flocks and herds and tents, and the land could not sustain them while dwelling together, for their possessions were so great that they were not able to remain together. That the flocks and herds I was talking about, there were too many of them. Lot had his, and Abram had his, and as I understand it, animals eat things. And sheep and goats and donkeys, they eat grass and they eat vegetation, and you can't stay very long in one particular area because they eat everything up, and you got to kind of move on a little bit. And if you have too many flocks and herds, it's just very difficult to manage all of them in the same area at the same time. So it was a problem, and it led to arguments between some of Lot's men and Abram's men, and there was strife between the herdsmen of Abram's livestock and the herdsmen of Lot's livestock. Who gets the better area, and your sheep got the way of my sheep. People can argue about anything, can't they? And this is kind of important, Who takes precedence? And so it was a problem. And we read here that this was the solution Abram came up with. Abram said to Lot, "Please let there be no strife between you and me, nor between my herdsmen and your herdsmen, for we are brothers." Family. I don't want to be in an argument with you. You don't want to be in an argument with me. We need to work this out. We need to resolve this in a way that is equitable and peaceful. And so he makes a suggestion, Abram does, in verse 9 of Genesis 13. "Is not the whole land before you? Please separate from me. If to the left, then I will go to the right. And if to the right, then I'll go to the left." He's very, very generous, very accommodating. He says, "Nephew, let's not fight. Look around, whichever way that you find desirable, go that way, and I'll go the other way." It's not that they're completely ending their relationship. They're still had that family connection, and later on Abram would come and save Lot, help Lot out. So it wasn't that he was abandoning his nephew. He was just trying to work things out in a way that would be helpful to the situation. And so that's the suggestion he made. And it says Lot lifted up his eye and he saw all the valley of the Jordan, that it was well watered everywhere. And this was before God destroyed Sodom and Gomorrah. And so it was like the garden of the Lord, like the land of Egypt as you go to Zoar. And that's good. It's green and well watered and lush, lots of vegetation, kind of stuff the sheep and goats like. Good spot. And Lot said, well, that looks good. I'm using all of the ability that I have as a man who owns flocks and herds, assessing the quality of terrain. This is the spot. This is the good area. So that's where I'm going to go. So Lot chose for himself all the valley of the Jordan, and Lot journeyed eastward, thus separated from each other. So Abram went the other way. Abram settled in the land of Canaan, while Lot settled in the cities of the valley and removed his tents as far as Sodom. So Lot moves down into the valley, where it's green and well watered, but it's also a place with some large cities, among them Sodom and Gomorrah. And these are prosperous cities. And that's where Lot moves. He moves down there. And the very next verse tells us the men of Sodom were wicked exceedingly and sinners against the Lord. Now, I don't know if Lot knew that or not. He would come to find out. He would come to learn that they were. It wouldn't take him very long. But that's the situation that was in the area that Lot chose to move into. That's where he moved, and that's what was going on there. So how did this work out with Abram and Lot up there at Bethel, between Bethel and Ai, and Lot looked down here in the valley? Let's say that Sodom and Gomorrah was there. Say, no, it's on the southern end of the sea, of the Dead Sea. Maybe not. Maybe it was up here. I've read some archaeological studies to indicate that there's some cities over here that may have been Sodom and Gomorrah, but that's neither here nor there. Lot decided to go into the Valley of the Jordan, which also includes down here below the Dead Sea, but Abram stayed over here. He stayed over here in a territory that was dry, that was mountainous, it was rough. Where he stayed. How did it turn out? Well, Abraham was blessed. He was blessed. In fact, it says so right away. And I don't know if one thing necessarily follows the other, like B follows A, but it does in the text. You can surmise that God liked what Abram had done. Verse 14, the Lord said to Abram after Lot had separated from him, now lift up your eyes and take and look from the place where you are northward and southward and eastward and westward. Now that strikes me as kind of interesting because it seems to be connected to what had just happened. Lot looked everywhere. He picked a spot and he said, I want that spot. Now he did that because Abram had said, you pick. You pick. And Lot picked, and he went eastward. And Abram stayed where he was and moved south and stayed in the land of Canaan. And God, immediately after that, he said, Abram, I want you to look everywhere. Look all around you. Look in all directions. For all the land which you see, I will give it to you and to your descendants forever. Now, I don't know that it's necessarily connected, but I kind of suspect it is. That there's something about what Abram had done that God respected and admired. Now, God had already made a promise to Abram, and God already had acknowledged his faith, but there are various stages in this story of Abram and his faith and God's responding to Abram's faith. And it seems like every time that Abram does something that's especially marked of his faith, that God responds to it. And he does here, and he says, you know, you haven't lost anything, Abram. You haven't given up anything. All of this land is going to be your descendants. All of it. And of course, there's a lot of meat there. There's the land. There's that. And then there's these descendants, which, you know, talk to a man that doesn't have any children. That's saying a lot, I suppose, at the time. You're going to have descendants. And in fact, again, the implication is that there are going to be so many descendants, they're going to fill up this whole land. And it's all going to be theirs. Now that had to be music to Abram's ears. You had to know that he appreciated and relished those words. I will make your descendants as the dust of the earth, so that if anyone can number the dust of the earth, then your descendants can also be numbered through its length and breadth. All over this territory. You know, here you and Lot are talking about, should I go over here? Should I go over here? Your descendants will cover the land. And I got to tell you, Abram was familiar with dust. he knew the quality of dust and how pervasive it was, being a nomad. And to think of his children as being like dust, that just had to be wonderful to him. Arise, walk about the land through its length and breadth, for I will give it to you. Yeah, you ever see one of those scenes where somebody is being given something and they're saying, well, what's mine? All of it's yours. You just walk around. It's all yours. Could you imagine being one of those first settlers? And, you know, you got this tract of land and just as far as you could see. Well, Abram was made that promise. And again, I think connected to what he had just done with his nephew Lot. Well, Lot also prospered, at least for a while. Things seemed to go along pretty well for a while, but not really for very long. There was a whole incident in the next chapter where he gets wrapped up in a whole war between the people of Sodom and Gomorrah and some foreign kings, and Lot and Abram has to come save him. But ultimately, we know that it didn't work out for Lot. Eventually, he lost everything because God was so sick of what was going on in Sodom and Gomorrah that he said, I'm going to destroy these places. And Lot barely got out with his life. He lost everything. He certainly wasn't very happy while living in Sodom and Gomorrah. 2 Peter tells us that while he was living there, his righteous soul was tormented. That doesn't sound like a very good life, does it? I mean, you think things may be working out business-wise, but with respect to his soul and his contentment and his happiness, and he's constantly bombarded with behavior and language and scenes of immorality that just upset him. He just constantly was upset by what he saw, which is a credit to his righteousness, not so much to his choice of habitation. And of course, he lost his wife when God more or less drove him out of Sodom. The angels grabbed him and took him out of town. And Lot's wife looked back against the instructions of the angel of the Lord, and she was turned to a pillar of salt. He lost his wife, he lost his property, and he lost his dignity with respect to his own daughters. That terrible scene that happened there. And I can only imagine that after all of this happened, if somebody had said, hey, Lot, you glad you moved down there to Sodom and Gomorrah? He would say, no. Worst mistake I ever made. Shouldn't have gone there. So he chose poorly. You chose poorly. You ever choose poorly? Yeah. Sometimes we choose poorly, make bad choices. Most of the time they're not very consequential. Sometimes they can be. And this is a sermon you've heard before many times, I'm sure, that Lot chose based on material concerns, what would be the best for his sheep, that he chose by sight rather than faith. He didn't inquire of the Lord. He didn't consider what the spiritual implications might be. He chose selfishly. He didn't stop and say, well, maybe this would be better for Abram, or Abram, you know, you're the older man, you're the uncle, you know, you choose. Or you advise me, or what have you. He didn't do any of that. He just saw what he thought was the best property, and that's what he went for. And for all of those reasons, his choice was a bad one. And should have become apparent to him, at least at some point. When his soul started to be tormented day by day by the things that righteous man saw, perhaps at that point he should have revisited his choice, but he didn't do that. So Lot chose poorly, and he paid the price for it. And the moral of that, the story that we are to, or the point that we generate from that, is that we should make life choices not like Lot. We shouldn't choose based on what is selfish or what is, you know, purely material concerns. And we shouldn't. And again, we're not talking about whether you get the chicken or the steak. We're not talking about that kind of in the restaurant. We're talking about where you go live, what kind of job you pursue, who you marry. I mean, when you make these big life choices, then you should think spiritually, and you should think as a person of faith, which is what Lot failed to do. Now, we say all of that, but the implication of it is, and the point that I've heard made from it, is that Abram chose wisely, but did he? That's a question I want to look at now. Did Abram choose wisely? Well, if you look at what he said to Lot, if you go to the left, I will go to the right. And if you go to the right, I'll go to the left. Now, I don't know for certain, but it seems to indicate to me that had Lot chosen the other direction, that maybe Abram would have gone down into Sodom or down into the valley. And if that's the case, and it seems to be the case, then Abraham did not really so much choose wisely as he was lucky. But the truth is, he didn't choose at all. He didn't choose. He let Lot choose. He said, Lot, you decide. You decide. If you go this way, I'll go that way. If you go that way, I'll go this way. That's you choose. And he didn't choose. He let Lot choose. And I think there's a lesson there. Let's see what it might be. Did he know the danger of moving down into the valley? Did he know that if he had moved down into the valley, that he would move towards Sodom and Gomorrah, that was a place of wicked people, that there would be wicked influences on himself, on his family? Did he know that God would punish Sodom at some point and then he would be caught up in that? Did he know any of those things? Well, I doubt if he did. Why did he say he would go that way if Lot chose the other way? If he really thought, hey, this is a terrible, wicked place down here, and I don't want to move down there, but if you choose to go that way, I guess that's the way I'll go. No, it's not likely that that's how he saw that. On the other hand, if he really thought it was bad, if he thought it was a poor choice, if he, thinking spiritually and wisely, said, no, that's a bad area down there, why wouldn't he have told Lot that? Why wouldn't he have said, Lot, I don't think you should move down there. That's a terrible area. So when you think about it in those terms, Abram really didn't choose wisely in terms of which direction to go. But he did make some choices. First of all, he chose to call on the name of the Lord. That's how this whole story starts. The beginning of it, Abram worships God. And he prays to God. He probably thanked God for getting him out of Egypt safely. And he probably called upon God to continue to bless him and to be with him and support him. Because that's the kind of man Abram was. Abram was a worshiper of God. He was a man of faith. And that's the way he lived his life. That's the way he chose to conduct himself. That's the choice he made. He chose to seek God's help. And he chose peace. He could have gotten a fight with Lot. He could have chewed Lot out. He could have kicked Lot out. He could have said, "Lot, how dare you and your men get into a fuss with me and my men? Don't you know I'm the uncle and you're the nephew? And you should know your place, Lot. And you'll go where I tell you to go and you'll like it." He could have been that kind of a guy. A lot of people are. But he wasn't. This is what he chose. He chose peace. Instead of being selfish, instead of demanding the prerogative and right of the elder, the head of the family, he didn't. He said, "I'd rather get along with you. You choose." That's what he chose. He acted without selfishness. That's a choice. That's a choice that you should always make. These are the choices you should always make. Always, always seek God's help. Always worship God. Always seek peace. Always act in a manner that's not selfish. These are good choices. And he trusted. He trusted the Lord to provide. He just did. He said, "You know what? I don't have to claim the best land. I don't have to be so demanding and so focused on making every decision exactly right and getting the best possible advantage and squeezing the last bit of resource. I don't have to really concern myself with that. I have a God in heaven who's watching out for me. And if I get the lesser land, the poorer land, so be it. God will take care of me." I mean, he had a perfectly good homeland when he left all those many years ago to start with, to come over in this this land he didn't know anything about. And every step of the way, God had blessed him and taken care of him. So, hey, Lot, you choose. Whichever way I go, I'll be all right. That's the way he looked at it, because he trusted in God. And I believe for all of these reasons that God said, "You know what, Abram? You don't need to worry about Lot choosing the better land. You just look around you. All of this is yours. And I'm going to see to it." In conclusion, brethren, we're not always wise enough to foresee all outcomes. That's just the truth of the matter. We say that we should choose wisely, but what does that mean, really? Does that mean that we look into the future and we say, "Oh, now if I go this direction, this is what's going to happen. And if I go this direction, this is what's going to happen. And so I can see that, and so I'm going to choose to go this way because I know what's going to happen." That's not the life of wisdom that I'm talking about or that the Bible talks about. You don't know what's going to happen. You don't know what's going to be the consequences of your choices. Now, you should choose spiritually, and you should choose based on God's instructions, and you should choose based on what's going to help you in your life. Get closer to God, choose who you marry, choose the job, choose where you live. Is there a church there? Is the church strong there? Is there going to be support for me and my family? These are all good reasons to make big choices in your life, spiritually and wisely, yes, but you don't know what's going to happen. But you do know this, that you should pray to God. And you should seek peace, and you should act unselfishly, and you should trust in the Lord. And if you make those choices in your life, you won't go far wrong. We should make choices based on love and faith and righteousness, and not figuring angles or what's going to be the best percentage shot, or just choose based on love, faith, and righteousness. And if we do, we can trust that God will bless us and deliver us. He will. It may take time. How many years did Abram have to go before he had the son of promise? How many miles did he have to march up and down and keep moving his tent and moving his tent, beset by foreigners who didn't want him around? But it worked out. Not so much for Lot. Well, that's my message tonight. Let us live a life of faith, a life of trust, a life of love and selflessness, and know that we don't have to be so smart that we can foresee all the things that are going to happen. But we do know one thing. Whatever is in our future, our God will be there, and He will take care of us if we will put our trust in Him and give Him our devotion. If you're wanting to do that tonight, to obey the gospel, become a Christian, be baptized, that's a wise choice. I don't know how long you got. I don't know what's going to happen in your life. Becoming a Christian is the best choice you can make. If you want to do that, come forward and say you will as we stand and sing.